This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Hello and welcome everyone to an incredibly special episode of Columbia Calling. It is episode 472, which might not sound special, but it is the 10-year anniversary episode of this podcast. So this week, I am putting Richard in the chair and interviewing him. But first, your top stories for the week of June 5th, 2023. Spiraling scandal this week as President Gustavo Petro has dismissed two of his core team after they were implicated in illegal wiretapping amid press leaks, particularly to Semana magazine. Petro's two closest advisors over the last year, Laura Sarabia and Armando Benedetti, left the government on Friday as a result of labyrinthine allegations and leaks involving lie detector tests, thefts of large amounts of cash, and illegal wiretapping of domestic staff. On Sunday, audios were released of Benedetti, a longtime political operator in Colombia, saying, "We are all going to jail, we are all finished," though he now claims that the audios have been manipulated. This scandal has brought into question the financing of Petro's entire presidential campaign, which former presidential candidate and rival Federico Gutierrez has announced he plans to report to Congress as illegal. Benedetti is also threatening to make public information he claims to have around criminal financing of the campaign. Meanwhile, Petro's other presidential rival, Rodolfo Hernandez, has been disqualified from public office for 14 years after proven corruption in relation to a $100,000 rubbish removal contract known as the Vitalogic case. He had otherwise hoped to run for governor of his native department of Santander. After a false start last month, dialogue with armed groups and gangs in Medellin has begun. The groups have no political status, so will be entered into the total peace policy via subjugation to justice, rather than a peace deal as such. The talks will reportedly include around 20 representatives of criminal structures, a roundtable which will supposedly meet every 15 days, with rules and mechanisms still to be defined. The current Colombian head of Drummond Coal Mining Company, as well as his predecessor, will be tried for funding paramilitaries. José Miguel Linares and Augusto Jiménez will be charged with links to the AUC, the Autodefensas Unidas de Colombia. Drummond have said that the evidence is provided by a cartel of false witnesses and denies wrongdoing. The company is Colombia's largest producer of thermal coal. In other mining news, 60% of operations at Chinese Zijin Mining's Colombian gold mine have been halted due to more attacks on workers, allegedly carried out by illegal miners collaborating with an armed group, which is reportedly the Clan del Golfo. Meanwhile, Petro has been at the summit of Latin American presidents in Brazil, where Latin American integration and cooperation was on the agenda. Notably, Peruvian government of Dina Boluarte was barred from attendance. Subsequently, Colombia has also returned to UNASUR, the Union of South American Nations. Former President Iván Duque had ducked out in 2018 due to the body's links with left-wing politics and Venezuelan leadership. Also this week, just for subscribers, we've got an exclusive Q&A with journalist and consultant Matt Yuki about the Gilinski-Hea takeover bid, a story which has been all over the headlines over the last few weeks. But for now, Those were your top stories. And back to the 10th anniversary Columbia Calling podcast.
It's Richard McColl. He needs no introduction, particularly not on this podcast. So I reckon we just dive in with, firstly, massive congratulations from me, and I'm sure a number of our listeners who I've seen on Twitter also giving congratulations. This question is from a longtime listener and friend of the show. It sounds much cooler in his accent, so you'll have to forgive me. It's from Josh Collins, who says, "How does it feel being so badass?"
Oh, it's a nice way of starting, isn't it? And thank you for the kind words. 10 years. Mm-hmm. I find it difficult to believe 10 years. I don't really think I've stuck with anything apart from marriage for 10 years, which I think should be applauded as well.
It's more than a whole bunch of people stick with it. So, yeah.
So 10 years, I mean, it is kind of amazing. And it was the 4th of June. Was the first episode.
Oh, June.
And so I do feel quite badass, but I don't feel that badass. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm a guy with a microphone and a laptop hiding from my children.
I mean, 10 years of podcasting, particularly given the recentness of the medium itself, is a huge achievement. I mean, most people picked up a mic in the last 2-3 years, right? You were well ahead of that curve. What made you do it? What made you pick up a mic in the year of our Lord 2013?
I thought I was behind the curve in 2013.
Interesting.
Because I was already listening to podcasts. I don't recall which ones, but I was already listening to some here and there. And I was like, it's like listening to the radio on sort of time delay, which I love radio. So it's I've always felt like, oh, but perhaps I'm a bit behind it. Perhaps I'm the old guy doing it. In the last 2-3 years, there has been a huge growth. But so many fall by the wayside as well. That's the truth.
This is true.
Why did I pick up a mic? I was approached. I was approached bizarrely. Like, a guy obviously found me through articles or blogs or stuff when I used to do that stuff back in the day, and said, "Yeah, I'd like to interview you about being in Colombia," and then said to me, "Oh, you know, aren't you interested?" I was like, I'd never thought about it. You know, I'd done voice and punditry and reporting on the radio and stuff. Once you hear long enough, people come to you. But I'd never thought about it. I never thought about it at all, and not something that ever, you know, that's always someone else's. And when I did my master's in journalism in way back in the day, around the time of 2001, that kind of time, I didn't even focus very principally on broadcast at all. It was always the really pretty people who wore good clothes who did that. I settled for writing, and that's always been what I've loved. So and that I can say now with 2 podcasts, I thoroughly enjoy this medium very much.
It's a great one. And there's a real, well, I've always said about myself that I have a face for radio and a voice for print. But here we are on a podcast, which we're also recording video for. It's one of those, you know, careers are very, very occasionally planned and mostly just happen to people, don't they?
I find it very weird, this whole thing about YouTube, because there was never any plan of mine to put it on YouTube. And yet it started coming round again, and people started recording their podcasts for YouTube. And so I was like, well, we seem to have come round to again to people. I don't know. So I do it. There's not a lot of traction there. There's not a lot of traction at all. But I do it because I guess we have to. I don't know.
You go where the audience is, and it's so fragmented these days that you kind of got to be everywhere.
That's
right. Let's go back to 2013, to the very first episode. How long had you been in Colombia at that point?
So I've been here since 2007. So it was a 7-year, pretty much, you know, if you count the full years. And actually, you know, we sort of discussed this offline, and it's worth mentioning. Around that time, I was feeling, I don't know if I could say sort of disconsolate or something. I'd been doing lots of sort of very pro Columbia type thesis, not pro Columbia as well, but lots of travel stuff. I'd written the Michelin Guide to Columbia and other things, and was contracted for BRAT, and it was had been a promise to my father not to do anything political because he'd been here in the 70s and, you know, lived in Brazil in the 50s, 60s, and I mean, the man had too many stories. He'd been held up by Somoza in Nicaragua and, you know, I mean, all of these sorts of things. And he was just like, and his famous quote to me was, if you want to end up headless in a ditch, write about politics in Colombia. So I kind of promised him that I wasn't going to do it. He passed away and I moved into politics. But no, I kind of felt around that time that I'd done enough. Sort of talking and even just writing about off the beaten track places and beyond. I was tired and I didn't want to write sort of, again, more pithy observations about real estate and things like that. And so much was going on in the country that I felt it was leaving, I mean, more a bad taste in my mouth. I think it's the most... a pleasant way of putting it. I was getting upset with what was happening politically and socially, and I just thought this is the change point where I can no longer just be on this sort of this, you know, be a friendly journalist doing this. I need to write the good and the bad, and need to study more. And it was right around that time, or actually it was a couple of months before, I got on the sort of postgraduate diploma for conflict resolution here in Bogota, and that opened my eyes and formalized a lot of my knowledge on the conflict. And this is prior to 2016, obviously, and the peace accords, but it actually primed me perfectly for the peace accords, because we knew amongst us that there were explorative talks going on. And so studying this at the same time, as well as going through what I hope is not a midlife crisis, but some sort of crisis, really, it kind of put it into... it kind of put it all into context for me. So episode one came around about that time. It was with Kevin Howlett, who is a Colombia politics expert. He has a website. I believe it's still up. He's now back in London, but it's called Colombia Politics. We were good friends. And I think we were both a bit green around the gills. And a single malt was on the table in my sitting room. And I lived in Lourdes, so a bit further south from where I am now. And we just sort of bombed through it. And what is so interesting about it, because you can tell that neither of us are, you know, practiced, we talk fast and we try to fit too much in. And that's, I've not re-listened to it because it would just upset me. but
I can relate to that. Yeah. That leads, I think, interestingly into Javier Alvarez sent us in a question saying, what was your intention 10 years ago? Did you have an intention as such? Was there a long-term plan to creating the podcast?
Absolutely not. absolutely. There was no intention to it. I thought, you know, this will be a nice sideline and maybe it will lead into other things. It's taken 10 years to lead into other things. No, that's a lie. It took 10 years to lead into the other podcast I'm doing now, Latin News Podcast. But it did plug me into other things, but I never really had any intention. I just quite enjoyed it. At the beginning, again, it was very much aimed at the expatriate crowd or the immigrant crowd, or let's say the short-term immigrant crowd, because it was still in that era of, again, blogging and before vlogging, I think it is, but it was still in that era. So I didn't really know where I was going. And it took me a while to find my feet. And this is where I sing your praises, Emily. I know you've been in a few years now, but I was finding my feet. Well, you know, it took a long time. But then when you came in after Adrian for the news, it has given us a real direction. And I feel very flattered. And also, I feel kind of just so proud to have you here on board. Aww, that's the truth. It's really given
that's really
it
kind.
It's given a great deal of gravitas to it, and it's made it a bit more formal. And we get messages that people saying the reason I'm subscribing, you know, on Patreon, etc., is Emily Hart. And so that, you know, that it's put us into a different level.
So flattering, yeah. But I mean, obviously, the platform and the reach that you had built by that point is what makes all of this sustainable. And that's what a lot of people never reach with podcasts, as you say, so many fall by the wayside. And anyone who was listening to those first newscasts, I would like to issue a formal apology to, because they occasionally come up, you know, on a Mac when you like accidentally press play and it brings up iTunes, which you obviously never use because we all use Spotify, and it will play me at full volume, often through my speaker, some of my early newscasts, and they're just, I sound like a machine gun. And I was very grateful to Adrian for handing them over, but I was speaking at 100 miles an hour. So thank you, Richard, for sticking with me and also for listeners.
But we all do. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you try and fit it in and then you realize, you know, I can still do this for 5-6 minutes and chat. It's radio and it's this long format. Yes. You know, it's 45 odd minutes, even longer. But that's what we forget. We don't need to rush these things. And then as soon as we realize this, it becomes so much nicer. And what I love about the podcast is that most listeners feel that they're sitting here with us. Yeah.
Yes.
And I say this
it's
all the time.
It's a very intimate format.
And that's fun. And they feel like they know us, which is good too. That's created, I think, this community out here and stuff. So it has been a ride. And again, I don't feel badass, but it has been a ride.
I think 10 years is a category entry, definitely. And I'm not going to say the word again because I just hate the sound of it coming out of my mouth. But the word that Josh used, I think, does apply.
Yeah, I don't really like it either very much. But
it just works for Americans, doesn't it? We just can't do it. We can't do it.
And I'm not going to do an accent either.
No, I almost, when I saw the question out of shame of having to say the word, asked him to send in an audio. And I thought, no, I'm going to balls up and just say this word out loud.
It's all right. Well, thank you for Josh for that one. And thank you for Javier as well, who's a long-term fan.
Mm. And do you have, I mean, I suppose that's a good question about the first episode. Do you know who listened to it? Did you get messages? Do you know what the numbers were?
There were 200 downloads in the first month.
That's pretty good.
Which is okay, you know, from nothing. I spoke to some people about that and they went, you know, you should be happy with that. Don't expect to launch out of nothing. And again, it's niche market English about Colombia. So 250 in the first month. I was told I was, again, in an American accent, I was crushing it. So there you go. I do remember that very well because it was totally new to me how to measure these things. It's not like you can see the likes or the clicks or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tech, what did that look like back in those days?
Well, I didn't have this microphone.
I was going to say, you're quite professionally mic'd up these days.
And the pop shield. Mm. And I've got a mixer down here, a small one. But this, so it was nothing. It was a Rode, I've got it somewhere around here somewhere, but a Rode podcast microphone. And that was it. And I know I have problems with sound. There are periods where there's problems with sound still. But I think that's a general problem.
Yeah, it's been a real awakening for me as well. It's unbelievably technical.
But it's like you said in a conversation, you know, there are degrees in this. We don't have them.
No. And also, like you say, you know, I think particularly what we do is slightly more casual and more intimate.
It's garage.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't hear the Hare Krishna temple opposite me today, that will be a surprise to me. And the traffic outside my flat is a constant backdrop. So
I'm a block from the Septima. At some point, there'll be the huge air horn of a bus or a crash. And I kind of want the Hare Krishnas to come past. Yes,
and you know what? It's called Columbia Calling, not Zurich Calling.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. The clue's in the name. There will be some good background noise.
And also, that's it. I mean, Columbia is noisy. You know, it gets good noise and it's bad noise, but it's noisy. It's, you know, that it's a reality. I don't know if it's, well, it could be all of Latin America, really. But I think I feel, obviously, living here, and that Colombia is noisier than most.
There's certainly a very different cultural attitude to sound and its place on either side of the Hare Krishna temple opposite which I live. There are two bars, one of which on Friday night at midnight, which was during attention migraine I was enjoying, brought out an entire drum kit, and they were playing a full drum kit in the street along to the music. And even through my migraine, I just felt an intense sense of joy. Like, that's amazing. A full drum kit. I don't know where they got it.
They knew you had a migraine. I mean, that's it.
They did. And they thought, this will cheer her up.
Yeah.
And weirdly, through the intense pain in between my eyes, it sort of did.
You see that? I think that's it. It's when my friends had ended up complaining, I think, to the police about a party being held in a building where they were. But I mean, it was out of control. And the Costeño said, well, why didn't you sleep through it? Well, you can't. So you've just got to embrace
it. Some of us can't, and some people really can. And if I, you know, if I learn anything while I'm here, I hope it's that. Just an ability to be unconscious. The drum kit was slightly messing with me, and I did envy the ability. But
it is amazing.
It's an amazing thing. And you know, people were dancing in the street.
Why not?
And not in a, like, you know, fantastical song from the 1960s way. It's a Friday night way. Yeah. Just that's a thing people do.
But you're downtown Medellin, aren't you?
I live in Centro Candelaria Prado area. Cool. So it's hardly a surprise when you hear the background noise. Although I did come to Bogota and it was the loudest recording I'd ever done. I had a number of comments saying, was it raining so hard that it made you laugh? Because at minute two, you sound like you're laughing at the rain. And they were bang on. And I thought I'd covered it. And I obviously haven't.
You can't. It picks up everything. The mics pick up everything. It's like, I'm sure you can see someone's doing the dishes back there. I can hear the clanking going on. So
it's incredible. And, you know, modern mics for some reason are built to pick it all up. So I guess to listeners, you're welcome. Welcome to Colombia. You get a little taste of, you know, our environment as we record.
The true ambience.
The ambience.
That's what we're going to call it.
That's exactly it. So after the first one, you had a big response. I mean, 200 listeners for a first podcast that's a big response. How did you decide what next, or whether to do it weekly or monthly? How did the structure come about?
Well, I figured weekly was going to be the thing, because the only way of building and growing has been consistency. And, you know, making that day the day that it comes out, making this the format and so on. And I basically leaned on people I knew and acquaintances for the first few weeks. It's like, because I've got no history really in the media. I've got lots of acquaintances and friends, but at the same time I want to be able to move out there into more serious episodes and issues. And yet, you know, with 1, 2, 5, 6 episodes, you're still not, you know, I didn't feel I was there to be able to ask people with maybe people from more academic backgrounds and so on. So it was, again, about building up a bit more. And I was looking at some of the episodes, you know, they're not good. they're very bloggy style ones. But again, it was about getting more under my belt. And I was looking at you because Yeah, I can see, you know, when I'm looking at the sort of 200 episodes, 200s, 300s and 400s, we really get going, and people have approached us to do podcasts, which is very flattering indeed. And different stories, but stories that are so interesting. Whereas in the first, let's say the first half, I was still sort of thrashing around looking for the right vein and the right tone.
It's sort of settling in or trying on coats. Got a friend who always talks about trying on coats until you find the one that fits. And you can sort of shrug them off quite easily if it doesn't fit. It's a great, like a really heavy winter coat. You can sort of shrug it off and grab a new one without too much difficulty, which, you know, I don't know if you ever thought about doing something super, super, super formal, but the tone has been quite a constant.
Yeah,
It's very personal to you, I think, the tone.
Yeah, and I think I like it. I thank you for that. I don't want it to be as formal as, you know, Newsnight. We do address, obviously, important issues, but I think there's a way of being able to make it accessible from a conversation. Yes. A lot of people say, you know, you're really upbeat and so on, but I'm not always. That's the truth.
No. Certain issues, it's very difficult to be upbeat about.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but it is personal. Like you say, it's personal.
Yeah. But I think that's the nice thing about it. Certainly since I've been working on it or even been sort of involved in Columbia stuff. Because when you started, I would have been able to roughly point Columbia out on a map, but that would have about been the extent of it.
You're just 2013. Aging me. You're aging.
Sorry. Me, no, not aging you. Just I was talking to a friend who called you, in a flattering way, the OG gringo in Columbia, which
I'm
I think...
not. There I know, are OGs.
There are. Oh, I mean, Adrian predates you by some time.
No, well, he started. He started Columbia Reports just a little bit before Columbia Calling.
Just a little Calling. Bit before. Interesting.
But we were around. I think we arrived in Columbia around the same time, though.
Yeah.
Adrian,
interesting one.
Yeah, I don't know how to compare myself to Adrian. He likes to be called the enfant terrible. But he's you know, a friend and also very peculiar.
He's a wonderfully unique person, and I think our news styles have been slightly different, probably.
Yes, definitely.
I think that was a big.
Well, you can hear him smoking in them. I mean, that's the point. One of the things, and then love something that. You know, and I don't edit or anything, and you hear him smoking, and then you hear, and it's going to be a total bloodbath. You know, and you're like, that's not news reporting.
I mean. It is in Adrian's style of news reporting, yes. I would venture.
I expect a total meltdown in the Democratic, you know, and you're like, oh boy, where's he going with this one?
I actually thought of asking him to do the news this week because I thought people might be tired of, you know, me doing the news. And
they are
more,
not tired of
more,
you, Emily.
More and more news. Very different tone. But so in those early ones, was there a range of formality? Did you play with tone a bit? Is there one where you are being Jeremy Paxman?
No, not exactly. When I think about some of the early ones that I enjoyed and maybe changing a bit, I don't Paxman it at all, but with one where a lady, Claire Austin, from Essex, and she now lives in Spain, but she moved over pregnant with her Colombian boyfriend, now husband, and she was in a hospital, not a private hospital, a public hospital in a barrio where gringos don't live. That's where her husband's from. And she's in the stirrups about to give birth. And her Spanish is not very good at this stage. And this is one of them that, you know, I sort of got halfway through listening to her tale and I was like, I really enjoy this because it's storytelling.
Yeah.
And she's there, she's describing it all. And she says, you know, the gynecologist who's delivering the baby, her son, who was fine and everything else, and didn't speak English, but tried to comfort her by, you know, repeating over and over again the few words in English that he knew. There were two of them. And I've not forgotten this. And that's all way back in the day. So that's some testament to it. One was mouse. And the other one was chocolate. And those were the two words he was using to comfort her as she was in labor.
And obvious question, did it work?
Yes.
Are those effective words for comforting?
Well, you know, the boy was born well and she got through it well. And I thought it was so endearing at the same time. And I thought
amazing.
This is a way of easing out people's kind of memorable and amazing stories. And then again, Columbia was the lens for this because it could have been in many, many places, I think, you know, in the sort of, again, fish out of water type thing. But to have someone share that, and that's intensely personal. it's
can't
quite,
think of anything more personal than birth. No.
Yeah, a vivid image. So, and he's going, mouse, chocolate. So I thought that was great. And then a kind of serious one popped up, and it was with a guy called Tom Hart Dyke, who you may have heard of, who is an orchid specialist now. And he's one of the pair. The other guy was, I can't remember his last name now, Tom Hart Dyke and the other guy. They were the ones kidnapped in the late 90s, I think. It was the late 90s, by the ELN from the Lost City. And they were held for a long time. Actually, no, it might not have been the ELN. It might have been the FARC, because they went off looking for orchids. and he was kidnapped for a long time. And actually, the family thought they were dead. And I was put in contact again by someone through like the Women's Institute in Kent where he lives. And it was just a bizarre, convoluted Incredible. Way. In fact, it was Vicky Kellaway's contact. Vicky Kellaway, a longtime immigrant to Colombia as well. And she was one of the first episodes when she was a blogger and she had that page called Banana Skin Flip Flops. And she put me in touch, and it was funny, but there was a serious element to it. And Tom had recently been invited back by the Colombian ambassador to Colombia to talk at the Hay Festival in Cartagena. And of course, and he was far more mature this time around. You know, it's like, I wouldn't do that again type thing. And so, you know, we laughed about it. We laughed about him setting up like a cricket pitch in the jungle to try and keep himself sane. Don't know that would help me. But, the way that they would, but when they talked about their treatment, and of course, they wrote a book about it, and it was like called the Cloud Forest or something. I've got it somewhere in one of my shelves. Yeah, that kind of picked up on the serious nature of things, but it was only touching on it. But there was a huge response. So people, you could see what people were looking for a bit.
Yeah. It's amazing the variety of episodes we still do and the enthusiasm that they each get in their own way.
It's weird, isn't it? What picks up more listeners and things that, and I think maybe I take the reins here for a second. There are things that appeal to me because I feel like I'm doing some sort of social, I don't know, maybe highlighting something that there have been a number of adoptees from Colombia who've been on, and I always feel that this is very personal. Maybe they're not the most interesting, but they go to the right people. You know, maybe they get less listens, but then I get other adoptees writing in, so that's an interesting thing. And then the other ones that I've enjoyed, maybe not being so popular, but one is able to accompany them along their growth as well. I did an episode with one of the creators of the Feria del Millón before they launched. You know,
oh, wow.
Now how big is that? And so just to sort of think, he's like, you know, again, I was able to do this before they were famous. And I was thinking of that and thinking of others who've gone in that kind of way. Is like, you know, think of Sergio Guzman. You know, he was in infancy with just a website when we first talked. And now look at him. I love that with Colombia Risk Analysis. I love seeing that growth. And then there was friends of mine who started an agency called Boga Travel, and it was about kayaking up the Magdalena River. They've now morphed into what's called Awake Travel and are perhaps the best ecotourism travel agency and, you know, Colombian travel agency around. And to see, Amazing. So you see that. And then again, who's on next week is Brian Murphy O'Neill, lives here in Colombia, lived in Cali for a long time, continues to live in Cali. And in 2016, they started La Leyenda, the mountain bike race, which is now, you know, they've got a branch in the Dominican Republic. So watching that kind of growth, that's what makes things exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you go on to greater things, I'll say, oh yeah, you know, I knew Emily when. I knew Emily when she had Krishnas.
I hope to have Krishnas for a very long time. And honestly, you know, great things in journalism looks like you're still sat on your ass in your flat doing looking at a laptop, aren't you?
It's one of those things. Try and read the whole internet.
Yes, reading the whole internet is a very tiring business, and unfortunately has to be done sat in your flat mostly.
Yeah,
it's not exactly the most glamorous lifestyle.
It isn't.
No, but you know, there are definite upsides, and in our particular line of podcasting work, you have an excuse to email people you think are really interesting and ask them to talk to you, which is just a crazy thing to be doing and calling it a job.
Yeah. But you know, what's so cool, because it is a Colombia podcast, we do hit the right market for those things as well. I mean, you know, it may not get the hundreds of thousands, the millions, the Joe Rogans, but it goes directly to the right market.
Yeah, and I know which of these two podcasts I'd rather be working on, this one or Joe Rogan's, if I'm honest, for reasons I don't think I need to explain. But
I've never listened to it, I'm afraid, the other one.
Yeah, there are things that can be considered toxic waste in cultural terms. And I'm bound to offend one of the Joe Bros who, for whatever reason, has also found themselves listening to this podcast. And to that person, I do not apologize.
Are they called Joe Bros?
I've just come up with it. Okay. I don't know. Maybe.
I quite like it. What do you think our listeners are called?
Now, that is a question I would like to put to them. I will put it on the subscriber group and the Facebook group today.
Yeah,
would you like to come up with a collective name?
Because I know
thinking, as I'm sure everyone else is, about Succession this week and the Conheads being probably the worst collective noun for any group of followers of all time. So if one of our listeners could come up with something better than that, much appreciated.
Yeah, can we not be the Coalheads in there?
The Coalheads?
Please not. Please not. And it's not a bit close to my surname as well. So please not.
Yes. Well, for that reason, maybe more of a... I don't know. We'll have a think.
Coalheads. Succession. Oh, yeah. Well, we could talk. There's been... Oh, yeah. I miss it already.
Yeah, I missed it. Honestly, I started panicking on Sunday morning. What am I going to do now? How is my week emotionally structured without this show?
Nothing makes up the space.
But, you know, it's something everybody madly relates to. Everybody says, gosh, isn't it just like the British media? And if you're in Colombia, you're thinking, the overlap between politics and media here, the big families who run things here. We don't know that much about what goes on behind the scenes, but I'm willing to bet you could make us a pretty good Succession version about certain families I may not feel like naming at this particular moment.
Oh, I'll name them if you want. I'd like to say the Galinskis, the Santo Domingos, the Ardiles.
I want to see the Chars. I want Succession with the Chars. That's where I'm at.
But see, I think that will come out more like the Jersey Shore or, like real Housewives of, I don't know, Tucson.
Vanderpump Rules or something, yeah. I mean, again, I'd watch it.
I would watch it. Well, we could suggest it, but then they want a huge cut because that's their way.
Yeah, or you just don't. I mean, they didn't name the Murdochs for Succession, did they? So they haven't had a penny.
That's true.
That's true. So if anyone has Jesse Armstrong's number, let me know and I'll pitch him.
Very good. Let's move on from Succession.
Yeah, well, we should. So interesting one from Juan Pablo Plata, a listener, who says, what's the agenda? Why do you do this podcast?
There is no agenda. Total personal interest. If I'm really not interested in a subject, I will not look for it. It's entirely subjective on that. If you're pitching something that I think is boring, I know things that are boring to me may not be boring to other people, but there are some things that come in that are not interesting or too... distant from Colombia. So no agenda at all. Although I have a couple of trolls on the Facebook page. I'm not knowing anyone who knows me or knows the Facebook page for Colombia Calling will know who they are. They would say that my agenda is an entirely socialist, leftist. One of them said, I hope you rot in a socialist, communist hell. So I'm kind of curious what that is to start with and how
intriguing image.
Came across as socialist and communist at the same time.
Yes. I mean, I've certainly been accused of being on both ends of the political spectrum from my work on this podcast and also the money agenda. I was working on a piece that I lost money on by going to the Amazon to watch a manatee get released.
This
and
one
someone
recently.
Said to me, oh, so, yeah, yeah, it came out Sunday Times a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And someone turned to me in the middle of this reporting trip where I'm getting eaten alive on a small boat in a pair of Zara trousers because I'd had one day to prepare for the trip and I do not own outdoors wear and said, so this piece will pay, for your rent for the whole year, right? And I was just like, sort of stunned. This won't pay my rent for the 1 month, babe. Mm. Like, there's no...
But was that another journo asking?
No, this was somebody on a slightly media hostile NGO team. But it's an interesting one, the various misconceptions people have about what we do and why we do it, and you know, what the payoff is, but also, you know, what the inherent politics of what we do is. If you really listen to most of the shows, they're so neutral. They're about stories and people.
Yeah, it's a human. I hope it's a human interest one. But then, you know, I can say that I am particularly proud of the sort of series that went on about protests in Colombia when we did in 2019 and 2021. I am proud of those because I think that they kind of filled a void in terms of actually a bit more in-depth reporting. And I do need to mention it because it's still the most listened to this day is 375 with Sergio Guzman protests in Colombia, and it's just to explain and that it still picks up several downloads a day, and that you know, that's from 2019. That's pretty cool. And then, you know, we were able to get Elizabeth Dickinson on from Crisis Group, and she's obviously, you know, a real
fantastic
unrivaled knowledge in Colombia. And that was 377. We titled it the public's exasperation with the Colombian political class. And yes, of course that's political, but it was going on, you know, it really was going on. It wasn't even a daily event. It was an hourly event that was going on with these protests. So I was particularly proud of being able to report those in a little bit of a deeper sort of vein.
Yeah, and reflecting very much a moment and a zeitgeist and something that was being expressed from Colombian people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think either of us are here to push a personal take on Colombia. I think, you know, we tend to respect the opinions of who we're talking to. That's why we have them on.
I'm very aware I'm a guest here. I'm very aware. I live here. I'm a resident. I have children, wife, etc., businesses. But I'm very aware I am a guest here. I am an immigrant to Colombia. So So I was proud of those pieces and so on. So I had no agenda, Juan Pablo.
me neither. Although, you know, of course, one's personality comes through in what one does. But, you know, in terms of an intention or a desire for a particular outcome, aside from being interesting, entertaining listeners, I don't think there is one.
Not really. I do. I mean, obviously love emails, but I love, nice ones rather than wishing that I rot in a socialist communist hell is.
What would a socialist communist hell look like? It's just an extraordinary image.
Did make me laugh, though. It still makes me laugh. And I've taken a screenshot, so I have it.
Yes. Actually, a friend of mine who works in wellness, I feel like I might have said this before on the show, actually, said that, you know, we all suffer from imposter syndrome. So everything nice someone writes about you, you just screenshot it and put it in a little file. And then you should go and look at it every time you feel bad about yourself.
Nice.
Which I do. But I also do the same with trolls. I have a little file full of mean and silly things that people have said to me.
Yeah.
Not least because they give me a good laugh.
Yeah. What do you call the file? Mine is boringly called trolls.
Oh, I think mine's called humans. I don't know. I don't know why I've done that. I think it was a sort of like imagining myself to be a much wiser version, sort of sighing amiably and saying something like, humans.
Humans.
Yeah, humans. You know?
I think you're far more creative than I then in that one.
It was probably also so I couldn't in bad moments just search the word trolls and find all of these comments on my computer. It's to mediate the way in which I come across these comments.
I can't
maybe
think of the other ones. I'm going to have to look through my file again.
I mean, they're fun, aren't they? It's fun. I've had a couple that maybe were less fun, but most of them are fun.
Yeah, you know, but there's some that are actually genuinely, you know, pierce the heart. But then we are journalists. And
you open yourself up to it.
Pretty thick skins. How many rejections one has received over the years? It's impressive.
It is. Luckily, though, on the show, I mean, certainly from subscribers, you know, the communications I have over WhatsApp with people who get the news directly from me. It's an incredible community.
It is
of community. Lovely people, some of whom I speak to quite regularly.
Yep.
Through the WhatsApp and, you know, the Telegram and all of that. how many do you know in person is my question. So I feel like I've developed some sort of parasocial relationships with people I've never met through this show. How many of the kind of super fans and friends of the podcast are you personally familiar with?
Well, I've met a number, of course, and especially the journalists who I have on, met all of them, and of those who have been done, obviously, the interviews in person. But there are those who you feel like you already know and have never met. And I have got, there is an email in my inbox waiting there, someone wanting a Colombian wanting a coffee. And so I will answer that email before long. I do go out, you know, I do. I'm quite friendly. I'm quite friendly. You know, if you want to come have a coffee somewhere, I'm more than happy to do so. So long as it's, not, you know, it doesn't interrupt with when I'm picking up children. That's usually the only thing I really have to do. That said, I was able, again, there's a little bit of self-promotion here. When I was able to get Wade Davis on the One River at 346 and then, you know, re-aired it this year, that was a huge deal, and I didn't know him at all. It was out of nowhere, and there was a favor there from someone else who sort of paid it back. And then I met him at a bizarre Fundación Gaia. The Amazon, I was invited to this event. So Simon Mejia was DJing it, who I've still not met from Bomba Estéreo, and he stayed in my house twice in Mompox, and he was just up there filming, and he invited me to this event, and Wade Davis was there, and I was able to go, you know, actually corner him and say, listen, Wade, you were on the Columbia Calling, and I'm the guy from Mompox, and he went, hey, that was a good podcast. So it was actually really nice, and now we do have a back and forth on email every night. So that's quite cool, that one. But again, if we say about some episodes that I feel would be more would receive more interest than others, I thought the ones with Simon Mejia from Bomba Estéreo would be huge. And yet they were very, very average. And one of the founders of Bomba Estéreo, you know, that to me sounded like I was not only, well, you know, I had some street cred, but also tapping into sort of popular culture, which is not something that's really my scene.
Yeah, it is, I think, incredibly unpredictable. And something that's true of digital media more widely, and something newspapers are still grappling, magazines are still grappling with this, is that we don't really know what people are going to like until we put it out there. I find it sort of encouraging, the sort of completely mystifying, unpredictable nature of the whole thing. You know, what catches on, what goes viral, what, you know, just ends up in the abyss for reasons that feel utterly unfair.
There is
or impenetrable.
There is an abyss, definitely.
There is an abyss.
But equally so. And what we notice now, though, obviously into June and then July, because it's the summer holidays and, of course, the weather's improving, podcast listens go down. And it's a yearly thing. Yeah, it goes down.
It's interesting.
I thought people
are lying in a park listening to a podcast?
Or maybe they're just listening to Van Morrison, you know, and drinking.
Right, maybe music takes over in the summer. Maybe. That's interesting.
But you always see, and I'm starting to see the drop-off again, and it's not because we're doing less interesting podcasts.
No, I'm sure.
But you do see it, and it's really, I did actually talk to Adrian about this, and he goes, oh yeah, no, my sort of viewer rate drops off massively, June, July.
How interesting. And it's what in the UK media they call silly season.
Silly season. So you can get all the Pablo Escobar hippo stories out.
There is a sinking.
I had to do it.
Hippo stories. I'm sure everybody listening already knows how we both feel about those. Yes, they've been moved to a zoo in Mexico, some of them. That was the last I heard. And I say I heard. Scrolled at speed past on Twitter would be more the accurate representation of how that intake of information happened. Yeah. If I could delete it from my brain, I would. But here we are. I'm saying it out loud.
And I apologize, but I had to bring it up anyway. It feels like I've accompanied the hippos as well along these 10 years.
I need a different historical crime figure with a different animal. That's all I need. Did Otoniel not have a chinchilla? Like, there's got to be another one.
We have gloves out of it. Also.
Otoniel's chinchillas. I don't know. Let's have something new, if we can. So in terms of this progress through this decade, and there've been lots of interrupting moments in this decade, right? There've been the peace deals, there've been various changes in president, but the pandemic is worth mentioning because it must have changed for you how this all worked.
The pandemic obviously was a complete and utter tragedy. And my businesses, went to zero, but we had our health. We all got COVID. But the podcast kept me sane. And I'm not going to lie about it. The routine. And I, entirely selfish reasons, I kept going because I needed that weekly. Yeah. And what was the most flattering thing is it wasn't just me. I got... donations from people, Americans who were teaching at international schools nearby, who listened to it, and it was their kind of contact with a bit of reality. And one week some people just sent in $300 to say thank you. You have kept again a routine to this period of being of quarantine and so on. It was like, it's Tuesday morning, we know the podcast is coming out. And so again, while it was entirely from my perspective sort of there was a catharsis to it, but at the same time it was selfish. But to then receive, and a couple sort of stopped me in the street, are you the the Richard from the podcast? I said yes. And like,
wow,
thank you. And I'm like, I never really thought I was doing a public service, but COVID obviously was hard. And I think we all needed just to try and keep some sort of routines during that period as well.
Right. Absolutely. And as much as COVID was a break in routine, of course, I was already working 100% remote and 100% by myself most of the time before that. And Columbia Calling has absolutely given me a routine long after the pandemic. Mm. And a lot of my weeks look very wishy-washy and sort of flabby and structureless, sort of a body without a skeleton some of the time. And doing the Monday news keeps me sane as well.
I've had a good expression today on another podcast. You've got a body like memory foam. Like a memory foam mattress.
With even less structure than that, some of my weeks have even less, like you could put your hand in it and it would be gone before you took it away. That's what some of my weeks look like. But that is very much freelance life. Do you have any moments where you really thought, no, I hate this, I'm sacking it off, I don't want to do this anymore?
When it becomes difficult or people flake out on you. It's like, God, and then suddenly sometimes you're looking at the calendar, who am I going to interview? And maybe I've interviewed everyone, it's 472 episodes. It's like, there have been two interviews. Well, there have been more than two, but there have been two that I've been sort of kind of disappointed with. One for personal reasons and another because the guy had actually nothing to say after convincing me to come on. I'm not going to mention it because I'll probably get in trouble. But the second one I will mention because, he's a famous blogger and famous YouTuber, and he was famous for talking about Colombia, and he got Colombian citizenship because of his YouTube presence and then left Colombia. So I think we all know who he is.
I think I know the one. Yes. Yeah.
His first name begins with a Z.
An interesting figure.
Yeah.
Rather you than me is all I'll say on that interview.
I don't think at the end of it, I really understood how he made money. But at the same time, then I knew he was doing OnlyFans for a bit. So there you go.
Are making a stack out of that.
Do we have any other questions, Emily? Are there any other questions out there?
I've got a bunch, of course. I think a lot of people are either interested in podcasting as a medium or are thinking about doing one or have done one. And 10 years is a long time. So I'd love to hear some of your learnings. What have been the biggest lessons from the last decade?
Prepare. Definitely prepare. You don't go into this on a wing or a whim. And it shows in a podcast if you don't know what you're talking about. I'm not expecting, the person doesn't need to be an expert in the peace accords or the host doesn't need to be, but he does need to have an idea of what's going on. And that's
right.
Do have an idea of your how you're going to format it. And if that means you need to talk to the guest beforehand, then do so. That's my real one, isn't it? And don't cannibalize other things that you're doing. There are a lot of podcasts here in Colombia that just cannibalize like their nightly news and things like that. It's like, no, offer something new. do something, find your corner. And that's really my thing is why enter, and forgive me for saying it, but why enter a shit fight? it's really what I think about in this situation. I've thought about this a fair bit.
I'm sure. And in looking back a full decade, I think we have to look forward a full decade. Are we still going to be here in 10 years' time? What's it going to look like? What are your thoughts?
I want to say what a band says when they've played their encores. And they're up there on stage, they say, "We'll keep coming back if you keep coming back."
Love that.
There you
Love
go.
That. As a final really nice personal question from Mark in Toronto, really about how we both got here. When you were both initially contemplating relocating to Colombia, what was holding you back and how did you overcome that obstacle? I'll let you go first on that.
Nothing was holding me back. At all. That's the truth. I didn't really have anything holding me anywhere. I was always a freelancer, so I was just going wherever I felt I needed to go. The only issue that I had is that I had been very, very sick. And I almost didn't live to the age of 30 because of a double dose, so twice in 1 year, of malaria and hemorrhagic dengue at the same time. And so after that did kind of, kind of blanched my plans. But my idea is I wanted Colombia. After so many years in the rest of Latin America, Colombia was, it always seemed like somewhere that I could do stuff. And so there's nothing holding me back. But like I mentioned at the beginning, my father at the time, he was always my father, but at that time was like, don't do politics. And so that was, a rain, let's say. But beyond that, no. yourself, Emily, because I know it's directed at you as well.
Yes. Contemplation is a word that has rarely applied to how I make decisions about my life. I think when I decided to move here on a more permanent basis, I'd been living out of a backpack in various countries in this region for more than a year. And when I wasn't doing that, I was in various quite mad warehouse situations in London, kind of going back and forth. So nothing was really holding me back in that I had no roots anywhere. And the internship at Columbia Reports seemed to have my name on it at that particular moment. And Adrian thankfully agreed. And here we are.
Here we are. So how many years has it been now? Five.
It's been nearly five. 4.5 years I've been in Columbia.
Long time,
yeah.
It's a long time.
It's a whole load of time. So it's longer than I've been anywhere. You are the OG officially. but this is the longest I've been anywhere. So, touch wood.
Yeah. That's
good stuff.
This has been amazing, Emily. We should probably wind it down, although I think we could banter for hours, but I think
I could quiz you about your favorite guests and various other things for a million years, particularly.
Nah.
Nah. And we don't want to play favorites. Crucially, we don't play favorites in this house, so we won't do that.
We don't play favorites. I've got two children. I know exactly how this is. Although I have enjoyed talking about witchcraft, leishmaniasis, and chess. Yeah. So there you go.
Chess. That was a great episode. That was a great one.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, thank you so much for swapping roles and sitting in the chair, Richard.
It's been
great
fun.
To have you sharing some of your knowledge.
A little bit of insider.
Yeah. So I guess we'll both be back next week.
Indeed.
For the 10 years and a bit episode.
10 years and a bit, episode 473 with Brian Murphy O'Neill. And we're just chewing the fat about tourism and Colombia in general. It actually is a love letter to Colombia. So there you go.
Oh, fantastic. We should all be writing them.
Yeah, definitely. Emily, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Richard. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks for your questions. Bye.
The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.